At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, E.
What's up, Nige?
We have something coming up in the month of October that I have been really spending a lot of time thinking about.
Me too. When this book come out.
Oh, wait.
What?
You're right. Okay, I should have prefaced this better. Yes, we are very excited about the book, but
what you talking about?
This is something different. Okay, so it's called The Ear Hustle 30-Day Challenge.
Oh.
Remember that?
Yeah, we can tell you about this one too.
It's an idea about exploring constraint and rules and limitations. You know what I'm getting at?
What you talking about is basically living on someone else's term, Nige.
Yeah.
You know, exactly. That's a big part of being in prison. Yeah. And over time, that discipline really changes the way you think.
Yeah. And so this project is not about trying to exactly replicate prison, because there's no way we can even come close to it. But the idea is to explore what constraint and rules actually do to a person. So for 30 days, a bunch of us on the Ear Hustle team are going to take on some of the rhythms and restrictions of prison life. We're going to attempt to eat, work out, dress, and shower according to San Quentin's rules and scheduling. What do you think, E?
You know, Nige, I pretty much lived that life for 27 years.
Yeah.
I think I'm good, you know, so I'll just right. take the me out of we. And the only reason is I'm still enjoying the street food.
I understand.
I'm enjoying this. I'm still learning new foods out here, so.
Fair enough.
You know, I can say this, though. The listeners are invited to join in to this 30-day challenge that Nigel and crew got going.
This is the first time we have put together an interactive episode where the listeners' experiences are going to be incorporated into our own. So as time gets closer, we'll be sharing recipes and schedules and workout videos.
I think this is going to be interesting, Nigel.
It is, right?
I think it is.
I mean, I think it's weird to say I'm excited about it, but I actually am, because you know I love a challenge.
Right.
I love a challenge. So people don't need to do all of the things that we're going to be doing. You can take part in any way that feels right for you. But we want to hear about listeners' experience, and we'll be sharing our own experiences with the listener, too.
And even though I'm not joining in, I think Yaya and Antoine and New York and Rashid and all them guys on the inside, they're involved, right?
Yeah, they put the workouts together for us. They're going to give us tips. And obviously, we're going to be trading experiences with them.
So either y'all going to be ripped up, or y'all gonna have barrel bodies at the end of this.
It's gonna be interesting to see what happens, that's for sure.
To find out more and to take the challenge with us, go to earhustlesq.com/challenge.
My name is Maria Feldman. I'm the director of operations at Reveal. The following episode of Ear Hustle contains language and descriptions of violence and self-harm. It may not be appropriate for all listeners. Discretion is advised.
What's your name and what was your bail?
My name is Angel and my bail was like $175,000.
Jesse, I've been incarcerated 12 years. I think my bail was $90,000.
Yeah, like $1.2
million. And did you get out?
Nope, I didn't. I couldn't pay for it. My family couldn't pay for it. That shit was too much.
My name is Rodney Calvin Jones. My bail was $2.5
million. Was you able to bail out?
Never. No.
My name is Quincy. I've been incarcerated for about 4 years now, and my bail was at $10,000, I think.
Did you bail out?
No, I didn't. Heck no. I wasn't paying that money. We broke. We ain't got no money like that.
We've mentioned bail on this show a bunch of times, Earlon, and I gotta be honest with you, I still find it confusing.
Yeah, I mean, I do get that. Let's just say for now that bail is a big chunk of money that you pay to ensure that you show up for court. Like, this is a guarantee.
Okay. And if you show up when you're supposed to, you get the money back, right?
Yeah, that's the idea. I mean, it's the court's way of ensuring that you won't do it moving.
Do it moving? I've got an
Vamoose,
idea, but...
on the run. Bon voyage.
Pew! Ooh, I love your sound effects. Well, E, that's what we're going to talk about on the show today. Bail.
It's a whole world, Nige. Not just the bail itself. You got the bails bondsmen. You got the bounty hunters, the family who put up the money on your behalf.
Right.
All these people who are trying to make sure that you show up in court when it's time to face those charges.
And it can also refer to a period of time, like being out on bail. It's a weird kind of limbo zone. I mean, you're sort of free, but you're sort of not. The threat of prison is just hanging over you.
Like kind of a purgatory.
I'm Nigel Poor.
And I'm Earlonne Woods, who had a $1,565,000 bail. Whew. This is Ear Hustle from PRX's Radiotopia.
At the top of the show, we were hearing from these guys inside San Quentin who had these crazy high bails. I mean, like hundreds of thousands of dollars. And I guess that's kind of typical, right?
Yeah, it is.
I don't think, Earlonne, we've actually ever talked to somebody who was able to pay their full bail amount.
We may have talked to somebody we just didn't know.
Maybe they didn't advertise it.
They didn't advertise it. But the thing about it is, if you're truly broke, you're going to be stuck in jail. You know, but if you got some money, then that's where the bail bondsmen come in. Bail bondsmen are the guys who will put up that bail for you for a fee, though.
Of course there's a fee. Of course. And we actually know a couple of former bail bonds guys.
Yes, we do. We know Caesar, who's been on the show a bunch of times. Him and his brother Mitch ran a bail bonds shop outside of L.A. for years. We took a trip down there not too long ago to check in with him.
Okay, so here's my first question for you. What do you think is the stereotype of a bail bonds person?
I would say greasy underground type cat.
Is that fair?
Probably a little bit.
This is Caesar.
I mean, but some people are different. Wait, let me take that back. That's the stereotype, but most bail bonds that I knew were more like mom and pop shops. Most of them were up and up and trying to help people.
I mean, I know you, so don't be offended.
Sure.
When I think of bail bonds people, I do often think of, I don't know if I could.
Weasels?
Weasels. A little weaselly.
But you got to understand this, though. They kind of have to be that way. You have to look at the element that you're dealing with. You're dealing with guys that may be killers or may be, you know, whatever. So it's definitely not for the weak of heart. You're not.
Right. So you have to know your customer base.
Probably.
Yeah. Okay. No, fair enough. That makes sense.
Why do you say weasels?
That was Mitch, Caesar's brother, jumping in from the background.
I said weasel.
He said weasel. No, because I guess, it's a good question. I just think that you're dealing with people when they're in a horrible situation and the
like
potential.
Like a doctor?
Like a doctor?
Horrible situation, doctor.
I think there's probably a lot of weaselly doctors out there too. But no, I know, no, pushback. I think it is good to pushback. But I do think that is the general perception.
Yeah, but I think that's not this perception. I think the people that utilize bail bonds, they're there when you need them. A bail bondsman is like a doctor. You want your bail bondsman. You don't want to just run to any bail bondsman. And a lot of people build a relationship with their bail bondsman. So people that utilize bail bondsmen will know that their bail bondsman is their friend. I mean, if you know your heart's bad, you should know you get a doctor, a heart surgeon.
Should everybody have a pre-relationship with a bail bonds person just in case?
If you're a criminal. There's been people that come in and put the money down and just in case.
Yeah.
You know, there's people that give you tips.
Are you serious?
Man, I've seen $40,000 tips.
Oh my God, Earlonne. If you're giving a bail bondsman that kind of tip, that is definitely a long-term relationship, right?
Indeed. I mean, you know that this is your life. This is where you're going to need some bail bondsmen. Mitch told us about this one group of cats he used to know in just this kind of way.
They would get a job fixing your house. They'll come and lay a concrete slab or whatever they do. And then they turn around and come back and rob you. That's what they do for a living. You have to have a good bail bondsman.
You know that they're going to be committing crimes, and so you're setting up a relationship with people who are going to be ripping other people off.
I've never bailed nobody out that didn't commit a crime.
Yeah, but you see how that's kind of complicated?
But in the same note, they deserve service too, right? So if you look at it, everybody deserves, hold on now, we're in this liberal world, you guys come from it.
everyone deserves a second chance.
But they have premeditated second, third, fourth, fifth. They have a whole business based on ripping people off.
You have to understand this, though. So who are we to judge?
They say they can't be judgmental.
Who are we to judge them?
Have you ever thought about just, like, not doing crime?
No. No.
Earlonne, I wish you could have been here with this interview. This guy is something else.
Because that's a pretty good way not to come back as well.
Gary Hamm, being interviewed by our colleague Rasan New York Thomas inside of San Quentin's Media Lab.
Mm-hmm.
Gary is what we call a revolving door dude.
I think this is his fifth sentence.
I'm going to say this. Everybody has an act, okay? He might work on cars. He might be a painter. But you know what I'm saying? I sell drugs.
You got caught 5 times. You're not that good at it.
No, I never got caught with the drugs. I got caught with the gun 3 times, stuff like that. And I'm going to get more drugs as soon as I get out, and I'm going to try to do it again.
How old are you?
54. That's my job.
One of the first times Gary got locked up was on an assault charge.
Yeah, I got into a fight at the 7-Eleven, and he hit me with the phone. So I took the phone from him, and I hit him back with the phone. So my bail was $250,000.
$250,000?
Yeah, bail mounts can get pretty crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, from what I know, the court takes a lot of things in consideration,
mm-hmm.
like how many prior arrests you have or whether they consider you to be a flight risk.
Okay, well, Gary did not have $250,000 in cash, so he called the bail bondsman, who said he could get him out for a 10% fee.
And that's the standard, Nige, 10%.
So Gary needed $25,000.
I talked my mom to bailing me out.
How did that conversation go?
We went back and forth. She said no at first. I kept staying on. I'm the baby of 11, so she's not going to leave me in there anyway. I already know that, so... Eventually, she talked my dad into going and get me. Now, the guy who I had her bail out on was, one of my constituents because we used to sell him crack cocaine. He was the bail bondsman. She had to pay the $12,500 cash off top.
Okay.
Then the payments for the rest of it, I'm giving him crack cocaine for it.
Okay, so let me get this straight. It was $250,000.
Mm-hmm.
You needed $25,000. He let you out on $12,500
mm-hmm.
and crack cocaine every month.
Yes.
This does not sound like a good situation. Not a healthy relationship.
The plot thickens. The bail bondsman also needs some kind of collateral, though.
Right. So something to guarantee that Gary won't, what did you say? Keep it moving?
Nice, Nige. Keep it moving. So Gary Moms put up her own house as collateral. Now there's a lien against it.
Right.
The bail bondsman is legally allowed to take her whole house if Gary skips out on the court date.
And knowing Gary, the little bit we know him, you think that's what he's going to do?
He's going to do it moving.
My mom calls me. She goes, what are you doing? I go, nothing. I go, I'm on the run. She goes, what do you mean you're on the run? My house is up on this. She goes, Gary, they're going to take the house. I go, Mom, find the money. She goes, you don't care? I go, of course I care, and
well,
I love you.
Well, what do you mean, Mom, find the money?
Find the
money. $250,000?
Find the money.
Find it where?
I don't know. I'm on the run. I can't find the money.
You talk to your mom like this?
I love my mom, but she has to find the money.
For the love of God.
Oh, my God, Earlonne, this guy is mercenary.
Mm.
I mean, you and I weren't in the room at San Quentin when this happened, but Christ.
Mm-mm-mm. Yeah, we'll be squabbing if he was in my family. Like, he, yeah.
I know, who treats a mom like that?
I don't know who treats a mama like that. Him? Him.
Man. So, it was New York and our producer, Bruce, and a couple other guys, and everyone was cracking up, like, man, isn't this funny? But when I heard the tape, I was really shocked and, frankly, a little bit pissed off.
Yeah, I'll say this, though. New York did push back a little bit on him.
Yeah, a little bit.
How could you... I got to ask this question, man. I could not run if my mom's going to lose her house. How could you run and have your mom's homeless?
I was only 24. I didn't want to go to jail. I knew it was happening. I love my parents. Sorry, guys. That's all I can say. I really wasn't going.
If you had a chance to do it all over again right now today, would you still run like
Yo.
That?
Yo.
But you turned yourself in 2 years later anyway.
Because I had to get it over eventually. But, you know, I didn't want to do it. You know, I had a couple kids. I think I had like 6 kids then already. Now I have 30.
For the love of God.
So I couldn't do it. I had too much responsibility. I couldn't just turn myself in.
Sheesh, it sounds like you were on bail too long.
There's sometimes we can go to jail and there's sometimes we can't.
If you couldn't have gotten bail, what would his situation be?
He was in school. He had to graduate. And if he would have been sitting in that jail, that all that could have been gone.
This is Tanisha. Her son, Damari, was a student of a friend of mine.
Is he the type of kid that could have survived in jail and figured it
Hell
out?
Hell no. Yeah. Hell no. Not mentally. Nope. 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 Not in there. Nope.
So you had all those fears,
nope.
too.
Yep. I already know what's going on up in here. Nope. Hell no. Excuse me, but nope.
Yeah.
Nope. Nope. Oh, no.
Damari got arrested after the cops pulled over the car that he was driving with some friends. Damari got scared and tried to flee, but the cops stopped him. Then they discovered a gun inside the car, and Damari was taken into custody.
He was like, Mom, can you please come get me? I was like, It's not that easy, baby. And he was just like, I don't want to be here. And I was like, I know. So he gave me his charges. And as soon as they said it, they said his bail is $125,000. Yeah, I dropped down to my knees. I just was like, what the fuck I'm going to do? What I'm going to do? Where the fuck I'm going to get that money from? Excuse my mind, but that's what was going in my head. And I just cried even more. All I can think is, I just need to get them the hell up out of there.
It's hella stressful, Nige, you know, a parent in this situation. I mean, you're going to do pretty much anything you can to get your kid out of jail.
Oh, totally. But Tanisha didn't have any way of getting that full $125,000 for the bail. So she signed a contract with a bail bondsman.
And that 10% fee came out to $12,500.
So out of that $12,500, Tanisha was able to pull together $5,000. But that still left $7,500 she owed to the bail bondsman.
So they came up with a payment plan.
Every month, $320 for 2 years from now.
So no matter what happens?
No matter what happens.
If the case is dismissed?
Even if the case is dismissed.
You're stuck in that contract.
Tanisha's situation is really common, especially in California, where we have some of the highest bail amounts in the country.
Yeah, and basically this means that unless you're rich, you're either stuck in jail or locked into one of these fucked up contracts with a bail bonds operation.
It's a situation where wealthy people just have a really different experience than those without a lot of resources. And there's a lot of work being done right now to try to change the system.
Definitely. But there's a long way to go.
I gave up rent money. I gave up my savings that I was trying to save up for a car. I don't even really know what the hell I'm signing right now because I'm under so much stress. I just needed to get him the hell up out of here.
Yeah.
He signed the paper, and he put the pen, and he turned his head. You could tell he was crying because he didn't want me to see it. And I was just like, just go to school. Just go to school. Yeah. I just want you to go to school. Just finish school. That's it.
Erlen, do you have an update on Tanisha and her son?
As far as I know, Tanisha is still on the hook for that $320 a month for the next couple of years.
Jeez.
Which is definitely going to be hella tough on her.
Definitely.
And Damari, I was actually just with him last night.
Oh.
And his court date is coming up, and he'll definitely be there for sure.
Oh, yeah.
And meanwhile, he did graduate from high school.
Okay, well, that's a good thing.
He did get bailed out and was able to graduate.
Gary Helm. So I listened to your interview. And now I'm here to be the badass and push back on you a little bit.
Nige, I knew you weren't going to let this one go.
You know me very well. I mean, I have to admit, I was fascinated by how unrepentant this guy was. And I just had to talk to him myself. I had to witness this. So can you just tell me your story? Like, give me your story about bail in 60 seconds.
I got busted. I needed to get out of prison. I didn't want to go back to prison. I was on parole. I made my mom bail me out. She didn't want to. I ran.
How did you do that to a mother? The person that went through all this pain to give you birth, brought you to this life.
I didn't want to go to prison. Sorry, Mom.
But didn't you worry about what was going to happen to her?
Yes, I love my mom.
Wouldn't a lot of people say, I got to put my mom above my own freedom?
Probably.
You have no regret about that?
No. I'm going to be bad, because I am bad. I'm going to continue my life.
You're really tough. It's hard to crack anything in you.
No, it's just that I know who I am, and I am who I am.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm semi-narcissistic, self-absorbed, want to be in charge of everything. That's it. That's just who I am.
Will you ruminate on this conversation later, or once it's over, it's gone?
It's gone.
I will.
You will?
Of course they will.
Oh, I won't.
Aha, I just saw a tell. You do have nerves. I see what you did to that little thing you're holding. So, Earlonne, this is something I have observed a lot in people. When they are nervous, they take whatever they're holding, napkin, Kleenex, paper towel, and they start twiddling with it, folding it, moving it around, breaking it down. Gary had this paper towel, and he was totally just fiddling with it, you know, like rubbing it back and forth until it was more like a stick.
Things I'm not nervous at all. It's wet.
That says something else to me.
I folded like 30 times as we're sitting here talking.
Exactly.
And then when I want to use it, I'm going to unroll it slowly. It's not going to tear. And then I'll wipe my brow and I'll do it again. That's not nerve.
That's a tell to me.
Okay.
That's a little broken moment. But I feel like I saw a little chink.
Okay.
Can you give me that?
No.
Can I just have that chink?
Nah. I like me. I don't even like me. I love me. I love who I am. I am who I am. I'm not changing.
Okay, there is one part of the process we haven't talked about. Basically, what happens to guys like Gary when they skip out on bail?
The bounty hunters. Kind of like private detectives meet cops. These are the guys who will track you down and try to drag your ass back to court.
And for a while, back when Mitch and Caesar were running their family bail bond shop, Mitch did some work as a bounty hunter, too. Well, how does it feel to hunt people?
It's an adrenaline rush. It's terrifying because every time you pull in front of a house, you don't know what's about to happen. You just have no clue because you're hunting something that thinks like you. It's not a dog. You're not hunting a pig or a bear that can raise up a roar. This dude can run. This dude can fight back. You don't know who this guy is because anybody, like my dad used to say, don't chase a dog into a corner because now it has nothing to do but turn around and fight.
Mitch says there's pretty much three different kinds of people who become bounty hunters.
You have the crazy ones, the gung-ho, the felons that are just down the road. Then you got the off-duty cops, and a lot of them start their own bounty hunting service. You know what I'm saying? Because they're good at it. And then you got the old man, and that old man is probably the baddest one of all of them. One thing you never do is get arrogant, get cocky, get lackadaisical. My partner, Big Rocky, he went into a house. It was a vandalism charge. The bond was $5,000, real small. Told him the whole time, don't get careless, don't get too brave, stay scared. Keep that fear in you and it'll keep you alive. He got arrogant, thought he can catch everything, thought he was the baddest dude on the planet. He opens the door, he kicks open the door, he walks in and this little bitty 5'4" dude grabs him from behind by his neck and just guts him in the stomach. And now he's shitting out of a bag and all that. And it's like, I brought him into the game. And I'm like, I told you, keep that fear, man. You have to keep the fear. Period.
So once you pick them up, that you put them in your car, what is it like driving your car
man,
with
someone?
Man,
that's the funniest part of the whole thing. Everybody's cool. Everybody's cool. They know it's just a business, like shit. And you laugh. It was like, man, I saw you guys over there that day, you know, or whatever. That's what's messed up because it's like, fuck, I want to let him go. Like, he's cool as hell, you know, but I've never had nobody mad after they got caught. they knew what they would, you know, they know the game they're playing when they signed up.
Yeah. So has being in this business made you more sympathetic or cynical about people?
I think the whole world's bad. I think Satan runs this world, this planet, and you got to skate your way through it. You know what I'm saying?
So I met this guy we've been talking to who had his mom put her house up, and he ran. He said he knew he was going to run. He didn't care.
Did his mom know?
If she knew her son, she had to have known. I've never met anyone so heartless. Like he...
They're all day.
You meet people like that often?
All day. All day, every day.
And he said, oh, he just didn't want to go to prison. He didn't care.
Right. It really sucks for the mom.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But it's not my... That's not my problem.
It's not your problem. But don't you hate hearing stuff like that?
I hate it. I looked at... When I did bail, I felt like I was just a vulture sitting there waiting for bad stuff to happen. And nobody ever called to say, hello, hi, you know, have you having a great day? It's always drama, just drama filled, drama and drama. So you get immune to all that.
Okay, so that goes back to my initial question, which you kind of pushed back when I said that a lot of people's stereotypes of a bail bonds person is that they're, I'll use your word, a vulture waiting for bad things to happen.
But that's how every animal is. I mean, as humans, we're waiting for bad things to happen to cows so we can eat a burger. I mean, that what Pac say, I was given the world, I didn't make it. This is the law. This is the law to help you.
Mitch told us about this one time. He helped bail a guy out whose grandmother had agreed to put up the money.
The lady got him out. 3 days later on the news, they went back and tried to rob the grandmother whose house we was at, and they stabbed her like 36 times. They're all on drugs and stuff. And it was like, damn, I feel like, fuck, if we didn't get him out, she co-signed for him.
The person she got out was implicated?
Yeah, her grandson. Ugh. And he was on the meth or whatever, the speed or whatever that crap is. But
so does that weigh heavy on you?
I have a switch. I cut it out. You know what I'm saying? It's sad. When it happened, yeah, I was like, oh, my God. Because they're showing on the news everybody that was at the house. That's the element you deal with.
When we come back, what happens after bail gets posted?
Purgatory. That's coming up after the break.
The next generation of influential Black voices can be found on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths. Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of Blackness from NPR. Each of NPR's Black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the Black experience itself. In the Black Stories, Black Truths collection, you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective. From Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations, there's no limit to the range of Black stories, Black truths. Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now they are the story. Hear a feed from episodes across NPR podcasts that center Black voices. Stories should never be about us without us. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get your podcasts.
So, Erlen, wait a minute. Were you ever out on bail?
Nah, I was in the county jail for 17 months fighting my case.
Oh, shit.
I didn't have $1,565,000.
What about the 10%?
I didn't have that either.
Nobody?
Nah. That's a lot to ask people, you know? You asking them from jail. You know what I'm saying?
I hear you, but...
That's something you're supposed to have in your stash. So, yeah, I sat it out in jail.
Oh, man. So, I mean, I know we've talked a lot about your time in prison after you were sentenced, but I don't think we've talked a lot about those months in jail while you were waiting on your case. So what was jail like for you?
Jail sucked. Like LA County Jail, it's a cement building, so you never see light, you know? And then you in there, like I say, 17 months, so I was hella light-skinned.
I've heard so many people say that jail is actually worse than prison.
Yeah, it can be. I mean, in jail, one, you have no personal belongings. You know, a lot of times they have you sleeping on the floor. Your business is behind the glass all the time. And you know, your family stay out in line 2 to 3 hours just for a 15-minute visit. So, yeah, it sucks.
Right.
You know?
You know, and I have to imagine that the fact that everyone is there waiting for something to happen, that dread and anticipation has got to be tough.
Definitely. But, Nige, I think it's kind of universal.
Hmm.
I mean, even if you can afford to bail out and you're waiting at home or whatever,
yeah,
you know, you're still just in a holding pattern.
Yeah, and that's what these next stories are about.
The limbo zone.
At night when you were trying to sleep during those 3 years, what kinds of thoughts were going through your head?
That white Jewish kids from the Valley can't handle prison. My parents told me you're not made for prison.
This is Justin Paperny. He was a stockbroker living a good life until he got caught up in some shady shit with one of his clients.
Yep, and pretty soon, Justin got a visit from the FBI. He was under investigation for corruption. That investigation went on for a really long time. I mean, like, years.
And pretty much that whole time, he's just waiting for the axe to fall.
The 3.5 years before I went to prison was the hardest part of the sanction, because you're wondering and waiting what's going to happen. I struggled to sleep, so instead I would eat. I would leave my home in Sherman Oaks, and I'd go to the In-N-Out Burger at Van Nuys and Ventura with my Cocker Spaniel on my lap, and I'd get 2 double-doubles, 2 french fries, a chocolate shake, and eat. My dog would have some of the fries. Then I'd go home and I'd play online chess all night and smoke. And then I'd go work all day, and then I would do it again the next day.
What others, like, how did the world look to you?
I loathed people who were successful. During that window, I used to look at my friends building businesses, getting married, having children, traveling to Hawaii, things that I was on a good track for, because I was very successful in my career until I made these bad choices. I used to loathe and be so envious and jealous of my friends. I'd tell them, I admire you, and so congratulations. And on the other, and in my mind, I'm thinking, gosh, that should be me. That should be me.
And one of the things that made it hard for him was that Earlonne, he had no freaking idea what prison was going to be like. It was just this mysterious thing hanging over him.
It's hella scary for people like Justin. Hella scary. He's not involved in anything. He don't have no homies in here. So for a cat like that, I know he was shitting in his boxers.
Oh man, I'm sure he was. So what was different for you?
For me, I was a part of a street gang. That was more of, I don't want to say it was more of my world,
yeah,
but that was more of my criminal world. You know, I was a part of this enterprise of people that had advice for me. You know what
right.
I'm saying? And some of that advice would be like, hey, man, when you get to the pen, don't be borrowing no money from nobody. Don't be doing this. Don't be doing that. You know what I'm saying? So I had somebody that was there. You know what I'm saying? Don't be gambling on your ass and shit like that.
Rin.
What up, man?
What's up, man? How you doing?
So, our colleagues, New York and Rashid, went out to the yard at San Quentin and talked to some guys about the ways they prepared for prison, both mentally and otherwise.
I want to ask you, the first time you ever got arrested, man, how did you prepare to come to prison?
I really didn't prepare to come to prison, but I think, you know, I was frightened.
Anybody give you any advice? Anybody tell you anything? Was you work doing your push-ups?
I mean, yeah, of course you get advice, you know what I mean? Don't get into gambling debt. Stay away from the homosexuals. Stay away from snitches. Don't do bad business. And keep your nose clean.
So the way you prepared for prison was eating?
Yep.
What was the logic behind that?
Get my weight up, because I was hella skinny when I went down.
How much did you weigh before?
I was 175 when I went down. Right now I'm 240.
So you gained 70 pounds?
Yep.
The first time you got arrested, how did you prepare for prison?
They prepared me from the gate. You know what I'm saying? When we was coming up, you didn't have people that would say, go get this job or go get that job. They prepared you for prison. Don't hook up with no gangs. You know what I'm saying? Just be yourself.
That's the advice they gave you?
That's the advice they gave me.
So before you came to prison, right, did you ever try to prepare for prison?
I think I was already meant to be prepared for prison.
How did you get prepared?
The big homies in the hood, always talking about prison. That's all you hear. Oh, man, I was in here doing this, doing that, doing this, doing that, doing that. You feel me? So it's like, mentally, I was already prepared. And that's sad.
So, E, there's a lot of people who have had no experience at all when it comes to prison, and they're just going in there cold.
Yeah, and I know from, like, all the stories they've heard about prison, that shit got to be hella scary.
Totally. And actually, that's how we found Justin Paperny, who we were hearing from a minute ago. It turns out there is this whole industry of private prison consultants. They're basically people who you can hire to tell you what prison's going to be like.
Basically, to pay for all that advice I got for free.
Exactly. Justin spent just over a year in prison on that conspiracy charge. After he got out, he co-founded a company called White Collar Advice. It's for people who are facing prison sentences and just have no idea what to expect.
What kinds of people are your clients?
So our clients, you may be familiar with the Operation Varsity Blues college admissions cheating scandal case. Our team is working with 8 families in that case, so very successful entrepreneurs and business people who took some shortcuts to try to get their children into school. Never imagined they'd become immersed in the system or get raided at 6 a.m. with guns and FBI and helicopters. Many of our clients, the majority of our clients, are people whose name you'll never know. A doctor who engaged in overbilling of Medicare or paid a kickback to a marketer inappropriately. An accountant who checks some boxes on a tax return to have his clients pay less in taxes and gets turned in by an informant. And just like that, you're going to prison for 2 years for mail fraud.
We're more used to dealing with the dingy collar criminals, Nige.
Dingy.
Not those white collar, crisp collar.
Not the crispy whites.
No. It's a whole different deal for those kind of people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, first of all, making bail is not a problem for them. Justin clients aren't hanging out in the county jails.
Right. And once it's time for them to go to prison, the prisons they go to are often pretty different. I mean, they're usually minimum security places.
Yeah, the Martha Stewart type spots.
But E, they're still scared.
Probably.
Because TV is so sensationalized, since prison is so sensationalized, rape, violence, dropping the soap, these corny jokes we've heard a million times, and they're pleasantly surprised to hear life in a minimum security camp or even a low. You're not going to find those sorts of violence. So I tell them, if you act like a fool at Dunkin' Donuts, you're going to get hit. If you act like a fool in prison, you're going to get hit. So presuming they adjust well and lay low and understand their environment, they're going to be pleasantly surprised of what's possible. But we also prepare them and remind them the highest value in many of these prisons is boredom. And watching paint dry, waiting for mail call, watching one page turn into the next. So once they learn that it's not a violent type of environment, but rather it's how do we overcome the boredom.
What are the rookie mistakes you made when you were incarcerated, and what would you have done differently?
I would have spent more time letting friendships form organically. That first afternoon, I spent 3 hours walking around the track with someone who I learned the next day spent his day speaking to staff. I was hanging outside the counselor's office, complained a lot, acted entitled as if he was better than other prisoners. And I remember thinking, damn, I just walked the track with this dude for 3 hours. I think I'm now attached to him. People are going to associate me with him. So I had to kind of unwind that friendship and how I spent that first afternoon. That was a mistake.
How do you do that? That's always a question I have is in prison, how do you unwind a friendship?
You master the blow off. It's hard because you live 10 yards or 30 feet away from someone. So you learn, you create a routine where you're avoiding them. It was very uncomfortable. So you go to you see him going to the chow hall, you hang back or you go before. You go to the bathroom at a different time. Or he asks you if you want to go for a walk and you say, no, dude, I'm good, thanks.
I think that question about like who you start hanging out with, that's something I always worry about if I go to prison, because I think you might very quickly just want to have some comfort. So you want to make friends before what you've said is get a lay of the land. And then I don't know how you get out of it.
Yeah, but who, and it makes sense that I would associate with someone who was my height, chubby like me, was a stockbroker like me, from the valley like me. It would make sense that I would want to walk the track with some of that, because I figure we have similar beliefs and attitudes. So I should have done more listening, more watching, more studying. I tended to talk too loud on the phone sometimes. And some guys were like, dude, it's great. You're going home in 6 months. I got 8 more years. Shut up. I'm like, I get it.
Did you have any fears about prison that were justified?
The toilets and showers. My mom joked, she said, oh, that precious tush of yours, are you going to be able to use the bathroom toilet? I said, no, I'm not going to go the whole time that I'm there.
How long did it take for the toilet to be okay?
A few days.
I began to wake like at 4 a.m. every day, and I'd have coffee and some apricots, some plums, so I could go to the bathroom in privacy, because come 7:30, there's 20 dudes waiting in line with a roll of toilet paper. That's when you feel like you're in prison.
My name is Daniel Lee. I turned myself in July of 2019, and I came to San Quentin in August of 2019, so almost 2 years now.
So, Earlonne, this is an interview that New York and I did inside San Quentin with this guy, Daniel, that you've never met before. Mm-mm. So Daniel is physically really small. I mean, I would say slight. And that also kind of applies to his emotional state, too. He is the type of person who has learned to make himself just disappear. How do you think you come across to people?
I've been told I have a bit of a timid personality. Like, I'm quiet. I keep to myself. Sometimes, like, if I talk about video games, I can get giddy like a little schoolgirl or something.
What is so great about video games? Why do people love them so much?
No offense to anyone. It's just that the world can be a bit boring, and then just immersing myself into a video game, I feel like I'm in that reality. Like, I'm able to do things like, I don't know, like shoot guns or like cast spells, fly around or, yeah, stuff like that.
So is it a place to have more power and control?
Just more adventure. Able to get away from the world, because to me, the world can be very overwhelming. And being in this world, there's a guide that I can follow. Like, I know what to do. But in the real world, I really don't know what to do. I'm just, sometimes I'm in a crossroad and I don't know which road to take.
After his arrest, Daniel was taken to county jail. He says it was a really lonely time. He was in that limbo zone we've talked about earlier, with no real idea of what lay ahead.
When you got arrested, did you expect to be bailed out?
I didn't expect it to be bailed out. I was actually kind of surprised that my family helped me out after what happened. But yeah, I was able to get bailed out with the help of a bail bondsman.
How long were you out on bail before you actually went to prison?
I was out on bail about a year and a half.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a pretty long time. Tell us what those 18 months were like.
So during those 18 months, it was a lot of just waiting and a lot of anxiety. I went to places where I wanted to go, like Disneyland, Universal Studios, watching movies when they came out, because I thought I was never going to see them, like Avengers.
Did you ever think, like, okay, here I am doing this stuff. The people around me have no idea, like, what's going on in my life. Did you tell people you were on bail?
No, I did not. I was kind of embarrassed and kind of, like, I guess you can say ashamed about it. But I just mostly distracted myself, not to, like, overwhelm me.
Can I ask you a question?
Mm-hmm.
When did you get the scar on your arm?
So I got it when I was out during bail. I was actually on one of medications, and one of these medications like made me sleep too much, like 18 to 20 hours a day. And then my family got really upset about it because I wasn't really doing anything about it. And then since I made them upset, I feel like I did something wrong and I feel like I should like get punished for it. So I did this thing to my arm just to like punish myself, just to finally understand what I did is wrong.
Can you describe it?
Oh, yeah. It's a scar. There's two of them on my left arm. On the, what do you call this?
The forearm.
Forearm, yeah. It's pretty long. It's a long ways, yeah.
They're about 5 inches long? Yeah. Well, what was the result you were looking for?
Just finally get it into my head. Like, I did something wrong. I really need to understand that. Like, I really need to do something to change, to fix this problem and to, like, get it into my head. Growing up, I've always been bullied a lot, and I never got, like, a definitive answer about why. It made me think, like, there must be something wrong with me. And then since I think that there's something wrong with me, I feel like I should always be punishing myself, try to get into my head, like, I have to do something right. I have to be, like, a right person, be, like, a perfect person or something. Yeah.
Do you think that you received the correct punishment in this case?
No. You know, I know this is prison, but I kind of expected to be beaten up. I feel like that's even more suitable as well.
Mm. So you're saying you think your punishment should be harsher than it is?
I think so, yeah.
I know you weren't there for that interview. What do you make of that?
I don't know what to think of that one.
Are there any other, like, any other stories about things that you did while you were out on bail?
I tried to play some video games. Like, I remember Assassin's Creed Odyssey. Is that the one? I remember playing the night before I had to turn myself in, and I still couldn't finish it. So it's just there sitting there in my computer, just waiting for me to come back.
Yeah, Last Night Society. You played video games.
Yeah.
And you tried to complete the video game.
Yeah.
Who did you hang out with on your last day?
I think with my family. I was at my parents' sleeping at their place. I remember one of my sister's dogs just sleeping me on the bed.
Could you sleep that night?
No. I realized that it was like 3 o'clock in the morning. And then I was like, okay, I really need some sleep. But when I got to bed, I couldn't sleep. I just lay there and then... Then I remember the blue light from the morning shining through the window. I was like, okay, time to get up, get dressed.
What was that like, leaving your house for the last time?
A bit. I thought I would be anxious, but I felt like, I guess I felt a bit numb. I know my family was feeling like sad. But I reassure them that I'm going to be okay.
I remember this person contacted me once who was going to be going to prison. He was like 40 years old and he'd mm-hmm. never been to prison before. And he wanted advice on what it was going to be like. And he, you know, he was really scared. And the only thing I could finally think to say to him was, like, you will get through this. It's going to be hard. You're probably going to face things you can't imagine, but you will get through it. You just have to keep your mind on that other end. Do you think that's the right advice, the okay advice to give somebody?
Definitely, I do. Sometimes that's really all you can say. And, you know, I think there's some comfort in that. Before we go, we wanted to share some sad news we got recently. Our good friend Rochelle, who listeners may remember from an episode from season 5 called Tired of Running, recently passed away.
Yes, this was one of the first episodes we really told from a woman's point of view. It's the story of Rochelle deciding to take her young son and go on the run to Mexico after her husband, Javier, got arrested.
Here's Rochelle describing her life before that all went down.
It was like the best life I could have imagined. Javier was a coach for my son's soccer team. We were always the parents that were getting snacks or taking them to like get pizza after like a game. Our house was the house that every kid wanted to come to. We were full of kids every weekend.
Yeah.
And I loved that. I was like, this is like the American dream. I loved being that mom.
Yeah.
Not long after they returned to the States, Rochelle was diagnosed with cancer.
Earlonne, I've got so many memories of spending time with Rochelle. She was really an amazing, strong, fascinating woman. She was so open, really beautiful, vibrant woman.
Definitely. She was cool as fuck,
yeah.
Straight up,
yeah.
You know? So definitely gonna miss her.
Yeah, yeah. She's gonna be missed.
To Javier and family, we send our condolences and we're thinking about you.
This episode was produced by Antoine Williams and Amy Standin with Earlonne Woods, Nigel Poor, Rasan New York Thomas, John Yaya Johnson, and Bruce Wallace. It was sound designed and engineered by Antoine Williams with music by Antoine, David Jowsey, and Rashid Zinneman. Shubnam Sigmund is our digital producer, and Julie Shapiro is the executive producer for Radiotopia. Thanks to Danica Rodemil, Elizabeth Camacho, and Valerie Ibarra. Ear Hustle would also like to thank Acting Warden Ron Broomfield, and as you know, every episode of Ear Hustle has to be approved by this guy here.
Well, definitely this is a different episode that I could have ever imagined Ear Hustle doing, a bail episode. There was one character in particular, I can't recall his name now, but man, when you manipulate moms and even reflecting on it, you still think it's okay. That's a whole new level of manipulation, man.
Yeah, that was ugly.
Definitely. And so with that, I will say I'm Lieutenant Sam Robinson, the Public Information Officer at San Quentin State Prison, and I do approve this episode.
This podcast was made possible with support from the Chan Zuckerberg Initiative, working to redesign the justice system by building power and opportunity for communities impacted by incarceration.
Ear Hustle is a proud member of Radiotopia from PRX. Radiotopia is a collection of independent, listener-supported podcasts.
Some of the best podcasts around. Hear more at radiotopia.fm.
I'm Nigel Poor.
And I'm Erline Woods.
Thanks for listening.
Support for Ear Hustle comes from Odoo. If you feel like you're wasting time and money with your current business software, or just want to know what you could be missing, then you need to join the millions of other users who switched to Odoo. Odoo is the affordable all-in-one management software with a library of fully integrated business applications that help you get more done in less time for a fraction of the price. To learn more, visit odoo.com/earhustle. That's odoo.com/earhustle. Odoo. Modern management made simple.
Nige, Ear Hustle listeners are the best.
They really are. You're always in touch, letting us know what you think about episodes and sharing the love.
Yep, it's really a two-way conversation, a relationship.
Indeed it is. And if you're looking for a way to deepen that relationship, consider signing up for Ear Hustle Plus.
Ear Hustle Plus, it's a new subscription service that delivers bonus Ear Hustle episodes wherever you get your podcasts.
In addition to ad-free episodes of Ear Hustle, subscribers get behind-the-scenes, off-the-cuff conversations.
We have a monthly AMA, which is Ask Me Anything episode, where you and I answer questions sent in by subscribers.
And seriously, no question is too random or wacky.
Questions like, what's our favorite book? Do we hang out in between seasons? What's the most technically challenging Ear Hustle episode ever?
Okay, Erlon, yeah, those are good questions, but like we said above, I'd like some wackier ones, actually.
We've also started doing episode commentary, where you and I listen to a classic Ear Hustle episode and talk about how it came together, hard decisions made along the way, and where the people in the episodes are now.
Yeah, we did that for Sellies, and it was a lot of fun, so we're definitely going to do more. And Erlon, tell them about that idea you're working on.
Sure. I've been sitting down with some of our formerly incarcerated friends who have gotten out and are doing well. Just basically showing how they went from one situation to a better situation, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Those will start dropping in the Ear Hustle Plus feed soon.
Listeners, we want you in this conversation. Find out more about Ear Hustle Plus at earhustlesq.com/plus or subscribe right now in the Apple Podcast Player app.
That's earhustlesq.com/plus or right in the Apple Podcast Player.
So, what is your favorite book, Erlon?
Sorry, Nige. You got to subscribe for that.
Really?
Yes. Radiotopia.